The General Mills Radio Adventure Theater. I'm Tom Bosley. Welcome to the magic world of radio. Do you remember the hero of the Revolution who stood before a British firing squad in 1776 and said, "I regret I have but one life to give to my country"? Well, it was Patriot Nathan Hale. His grandnephew, Edward Everett Hale, will also go down in history. He wrote a book about what it means to leave home and what little you were left with should you say, "I don't care." Our adventure, The Man Without a Country, adapted from the book by Edward Everett Hale, was written especially for the General Mills Radio Adventure Theater by G. Frederick Lewis and stars Russell Horton. I'll be back shortly with Act One. Well,
thank you, Betty.
Philip Nolan's story began on July 11th, 1804, in Weehawken, New Jersey, at the scene of one of the most famous duels in American history. Two of America's most brilliant politicians, Aaron Burr, who was vice president, and Alexander Hamilton, who had been the first secretary of the Treasury, were about to fight a duel in which one of them would die. The scene was a lonely meadow overlooking the Weehawken River. It was early in the morning. The light was still gray. Aaron Burr had arrived first, and with him were two trusted friends, Van Ness and young Philip Nolan, the subject of our story.
Well, this spot is as good as any, Aaron. You shall have your duel with Mr. Hamilton here. Mr. Nolan, would you take Mr. Burr's coat?
I see Hamilton coming up from the river. Is that Judge Pendleton with him, Van Ness?
Yes, it is. Aaron, before they arrive, as an old friend, I ask you, don't you think it unseemly that you, Vice President of the United States, are engaging in this duel?
Had it not been for Alexander Hamilton, I might have been president.
His attacks upon Mr. Burr were unforgivable.
Unforgivable?
Yes, Van. He said that I could not be trusted.
Well, would you have accepted a public apology?
Any gentleman would. But it was not forthcoming.
Oh, they are here. Good morning, Judge.
Mr. Burr, Mr. Hamilton, I shall cock the pistols, hand one to each. Back to back, please. 30 paces. Mark off, please. Are you ready, Mr. Burr? Mr. Hamilton, present.
Hamilton has been hit.
Mr. Burr, we must go. Come with me.
I cannot. Let me go to him. He's badly wounded.
Mr. Burr, Judge Pendleton is attending him. I think we should go.
Aaron, your young friend Nolan is right.
But it may be a mortal wound.
So be it. It was a fair duel. One of you had to fail. I'm glad it was not you, Mr. Burr. Now, make haste to your home. I will meet you there later.
Van, oh, come in. You seem distressed. What is the news?
Oh, the public is upset. There is talk of punishing you for the death of Hamilton.
But why? It was an honest duel. Surely they know my honor was at stake.
The coroner's jury in New York has found you guilty of murder. Oh, they found all of us guilty who were there, myself, Judge Pendleton, and Philip Nolan.
What? Whatever is that?
Don't show your face at the window. No, no, I'll go. Hide yourself. Who is it?
Philip Nolan. Let me in.
Mr. Burr, is he here?
I am. Come in, Philip.
We must get you to safety, sir. I know a Mr. Charles Biddle in Philadelphia. He would...
Yes, that's an excellent idea. Aaron, you would be safe there until the feeling dissipates. Let us all leave now. Is there a real way out? I shall go with Mr. Burr to Philadelphia.
Now, may I suggest you remain here, Mr. Van Ness? You may very well be recognized. I'll go with him instead.
He's right, Van.
Do you have some old clothes to disguise you, Mr. Burr?
An old homespun coat and a big hat belonging to one of the servants. I'll put them on.
You're undertaking a hazardous task, my boy.
I welcome it. I met Mr. Burr when he spoke before the Legion of the West where I was serving. Speaking with such fervor of the greatness this country might acquire, I deserted the army and vowed to follow him to the ends of the earth.
I'm ready. Shall we go?
Well, I'd say, Aaron, in that outfit, you're quite unrecognizable. But what about you, Nolan?
Oh, he'll be safe with me. No one knows my face. I'm nobody. Mr. Van Ness, what brings you here?
God, I'm not here as a visitor, but as Mr. Nolan's attorney. I shall call you when my client and I have finished.
You will be my attorney?
Of course, my lad. Colonel Burr has asked me to.
I've been here without anything formal placed against me for 33 days. I've heard nothing from the outside world when they came to the house to arrest us. Arrest a vice president for treason. I thought the world had gone mad.
Philip, Burr has been acquitted.
Oh, when may I leave?
Well, Philip, I'm afraid you may not. For some unaccountable reason, you have been singled out to be made an example. Now, be honest with me, lad. What have you done? What did you say? Who are those in your employ who seek to overthrow our country?
Mr. Van Ness, I know nothing. I was Mr. Burr's friend, that's all. I'm no spy. This is madness.
Very well, Philip. I'm satisfied. Burr told me you'd done nothing wrong. Tell the court what you know, and I'm quite sure you'll be exonerated.
Is it not so, Philip Nolan, that you are a deserter from the United States Army's Legion of the West?
Yes.
And did you not conspire with one General Wilkinson who was an agent of the Mexican government?
Well, I knew him, yes, but...
Is that, in fact, while holding the post of commanding officer of the United States Army, he was Mexico's agent number 13. Now, did you not know that?
I did not.
Then how much of the $2,000 he received annually was given to you?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Then for what other reason did you conspire with him?
I hardly spoke with him. He was a general. I was a mere lieutenant.
And a deserter.
I have already said I was.
Now, did you not secretly transport one Aaron Burr to Philadelphia?
I did.
And to what allegiance did you subvert the laws of the United States?
There is a higher allegiance than justice to one's country. The allegiance to one's own conscience and to friendship.
Your Honor, may I move for a short recess to enable me to consult with my client?
Motion denied. Proceed, Mr. Hay.
Well, it is I who wish the defendant to proceed. Now, I am sure we are all anxious to hear Mr. Nolan's appreciation of the extraordinary Mr. Burr.
He is my friend. He understood me and my devotion to the higher good. Those who would clap patriots into jail are the traitors, not I. Aaron Burr is as good a friend as this country will ever have. He is a true and honest man, and I would serve him anywhere.
Go on.
What guilt is mine since you have already acquitted him?
Hmm. During all this plotting, you had no qualms, no question, as to loyalty to the United States?
No! Of what am I being accused?
It was the United States that gave you the uniform you wear. The United States that gave you the sword that hangs by your side. Is that not so, Lieutenant Nolan?
Yes, it is so.
And you, Philip Nolan, swore an oath to be true to the United States, did you not? Did you not, Nolan? Well, I await your answer.
I...
Philip Nolan... Do you wish to say anything in your own behalf?
I have nothing to say.
Surely you must be able to show one shred of evidence to prove your fidelity to the United States.
United States? United States? Damn the United States! I wish I may never hear of the United States again!
Those words set into motion one of the most bizarre stories of punishment ever written. For I must remind you, although many of the events taking place in this story and many of those named are real, Philip Nolan never lived. However, so believable is this account that I have to admit, it just might have happened. I'll be back in a moment with Act Two. The General Mills Radio Adventure Theater will return shortly.
They're magically delicious.
Yeah, yeah.
Damn the United States. The words were out before Philip Nolan could stop them. Badgered, harassed, unfairly imprisoned, his personal beliefs attacked, Philip Nolan was alone. He waited in jail to hear what his punishment would be. He wore his uniform, but his sword had been taken from him. It lay in two pieces on the floor by his feet.
Prisoner, hear the sentence of the court. The court decides that you never again hear the name of the United States. Mr. Marshal, take the prisoner to New Orleans in an armed boat and deliver him to the naval commander there. Make my respects to the commander and request him to order that no one shall mention the United States to the prisoner while he is on board ship. I want the prisoner brought to my chambers. The court is adjourned. Lieutenant, I have asked you be brought here to my chambers so that you may note its contents. The wall calendar marking today, September 23rd, 1807. The bust of George Washington. On the bookcase, the eagle of the United States. Behind my chair, a portrait of General Washington, and standing unfurled before you, the flag of the United States of America. Remember these, Lieutenant Nolan, for only in your mind shall you ever see them again.
Philip Nolan, late lieutenant in the United States Army, before the entire crew of the patrol ship Nautilus, I, Captain T.J. Shaw, am directed to read this document. This person on his trial by court-martial expressed with an oath the wish that he might never hear of the United States again. The court sentenced him to have his wish fulfilled. You will take the prisoner on board your ship. You will provide him with such quarters, rations, and clothing as would be proper for an officer of his late rank. But under no circumstances is he ever to hear of his country or see any information regarding it. It is the intention of the government that he shall never again see the country which he has disowned. Respectfully yours, W. Southard, for the Secretary of the Navy. Crew dismissed. Nolan, do you understand what I've read?
Yes, quite, Captain.
What is that book you have under your arm?
The Book of Common Prayer, sir.
Oh, I should think that'd be all right.
Sir?
Yes, Nolan. Well, come on, speak up.
I was merely thinking that you're right, sir. There is nothing in the Common Book of Prayer which could be thought particularly American, sir.
That'll be all, Nolan. Take Mr. Nolan to his quarters below.
Captain Shaw?
Hand me that spyglass, Jason.
You see anything, Captain?
No. We've been sailing for 2 months and have still not seen a British ship. I suppose it is a bit tame for you, eh, Jason?
It's not that, sir. It's that Nolan man aboard. Makes the men uncomfortable. I'm sure you've noticed it, sir.
Oh, yes. It is uncomfortable.
We're at sea 6 months at a time, and our greatest pleasure is to talk about home. Can't do that with Nolan at the table.
Jason, you have a legitimate grievance. We'll see what can be done to ease things all round. Nolan, there appears to be some friction on the ship.
In the beginning, because of what you'd said about your country, they felt unfriendly. I think they're more tolerant of you now.
I'm not done feeling. I'm conscious you are carrying unwanted freight.
We have tried not to make you feel a prisoner.
I don't regard the Nautilus as a prison.
May I call you by your first name? And may I speak to you more as a father to a son?
By all means.
Who knows how long this sentence will be imposed upon you? How many ships will bear you? Can you make the best of it? Have you the strength of will?
I have made the best of it. Yes, it's a lonely and unnatural life, and someday I may miss my home and my friends, but today, I'm still angry.
Can I do nothing? Philip?
I suppose what I miss most of all is reading matter.
Do you read aloud?
Oh, I have, sometimes.
Come along with me on deck, Philip. 1 hour each day, I gather with the men and we read aloud to one another. Gentlemen, I've asked Mr. Nolan to join our reading session today, and I have brought with me an English book, newly published, I believe. It is called Lay of the Last Minstrel, which I had heard of.
Some of us have also, Captain.
At any rate, the smoking lamp is lit, and I shall begin.
Captain, forgive this interruption, sir, but since this is the first time Mr. Nolan has joined us, perhaps he could begin.
Happy to. Walter Scott. It appears to be an epic poem. Poetry. Shall I begin?
Certainly. Poetry or not.
Breathes there a man with soul so dead, who never to himself hath said, "This is my own, my native land," whose heart hath ne'er within him burned, as home his footsteps he hath turned from wandering on a foreign strand. If such there breathe, go, mark him well.
Philip, would you care for me to...
For him, no minstrel rapture swell. High though his titles, proud his name, boundless his wealth as wish can claim, despite these titles, power and pelf, the wretch, concentred all in self, excuse me, gentlemen.
I'm worried about Mr. Nolan, Captain Shaw. Do you remember that day he read the poem on deck?
I certainly do. Poor chap.
Yes, well, he hasn't joined us for a single meal since. Takes all his food in his cabin, sir.
Yeah, I'm well aware of that. 4 months of this is long enough. I'm transferring him to the Essex tomorrow.
Ah, well, now there's a boat that sees a lot of action. It'd be good for him. I'd say Nolan is a broken man.
I'm very sorry to hear that. I don't think when they sentenced him, that was in anybody's mind. There's not enough to do aboard the Nautilus. No, it's the Essex for him tomorrow.
Our guest was telling me he liked this ship much better. Liked the men on her, sir.
Strange chap there ever was one.
Union Jack ahoy! Union Jack to leeward!
Straight on course.
Aye, aye, sir. Captain Porter. She's the British ship Alert. Oh, it's a nervy little beast, isn't she? Does she think she has a prayer with the Essex?
I think she's trying to find out who we are. This is your captain. As we come about, fire two broadsides.
All right, sir, two broadsides.
Spread the nettings. Send your decks. Smoke clear.
Oh, sir, she found out who we were, all right. Her foremast knocked down.
Set the fore and mainsail and lop up close. Hey, who is that on deck in his shirt sleeve? That man running.
It looks like Nolan, sir, the prisoner. Oh, cannoneer! The enemy's jib boom
again.
Shoot them away.
Bowsprit, Jimbo, fire.
Fire.
All right. There we go. Down the dead end.
All right, now. Get her down there.
Get some sand over
here. Why aren't we answering?
Come on.
It's Ralph. The man at the wheel. I'm going to find out what happened to our gunner.
You bring that hammer. Stop handling it over. You three into the cockpit with the wounded. The rest of you put out this fire and help me pry that ball loose.
Yes, sir.
Nolan.
Who made you the officer in charge?
Events, Captain, events. We lost two officers in the first barrage. And, Captain, you cannot afford a guest aboard the Essex during battle. Good. Heave it overboard. Now. Load. What went wrong here? The enemy cannon entered this gun emplacement and put this gun out of action. Are we all ready?
Yes.
Fire!
Fire!
Good work. Shut away a foreman. All right, I'm going back to the hell. Get on with it, Nolan. You seem to know what you're doing.
I was in the artillery, sir.
Fire! It's Nolan. He's in charge down there.
Well, I'm surprised, Nolan. I thought he'd be cowering in his bunk.
What's your name, Nolan?
Blended. The Gaff and Spankaboomer down.
Hey.
Why doesn't she try to run for it? Now, can you see him, Mr. Brown?
Who, sir?
Nolan. I'll be blowed. He's showing the guys how to handle the heaviest shot.
Stop.
A splendid thing.
Well, one doesn't forget one's artillery training very easily, sir.
The Essex owes you a great deal. I shall never forget this day, sir. And you never shall either, Mr. Nolan.
Pound for pound, timber for timber, the American frigates outclassed the British. But their greatest advantage was the spirit of the men, fighting for something they believed in. That very spirit of 76, which Philip Nolan had denied, suddenly called him to action, made him accountable. How difficult it must have been for Philip Nolan, a man without a country, to find peace and sleep that night. I shall return in a moment with Act Three. General Mills Radio Adventure Theater will return shortly. Was Philip Nolan fighting side by side with the men of the Essex because they were partners against a common enemy? Or as an American defending the United States? It was a question to which he had only just learned the answer. His leadership that day on the gun deck made Nolan realize who he was and what he really felt at heart. The defeated British ship, Alert, lowered its Union Jack. Their captain came aboard and in the customary ceremony handed his sword to Captain Porter.
Where's Mr. Nolan? I've asked you to fetch him.
Captain, you asked me to the quarterdeck, sir?
Mr. Nolan...
Yes, sir.
We're all beholden to you today. Today, you are one of us. Now, I wish to present you with my own ceremonial sword. I've had it at my side for many years. 100 years ago, it belonged to the Duke de Brolé. I pass it to you now in gratitude.
Sir, I have not worn a sword since that day at Fort Adams. That day. It is my birthday today. It seems incredible to me that I have spent 30 years at sea, living on 21 different ships and never once touching land. This Cumberland is a fine ship. We patrol the South Atlantic waters, intercepting slave traders. Come in, the door's not locked.
Lieutenant Nolan?
Who is it? Stand over here, young man, where the light is better. Van. Van, is it you?
Oh, indeed, sir. That's my first name, but I don't think we ever met before.
Your voice, your face, and your bearing remind me of a dear friend many years ago. What is your name, young man?
Ensign Van Ness, Jr., sir.
I knew it. Is Van Ness your father?
He is, sir, yes. Did you know him?
Tell me, did he ever mention the name of Lieutenant Philip Nolan?
Are you the Philip Nolan?
I expect no one else would care to be.
Well, yes, sir. I've often heard him speak of you before he died.
Oh. So he has died, has he? I am not permitted to know who is still alive.
Sled, schooner, off, stand it!
Oh. Well, let us go on deck. Have you ever seen a slave vessel, Van?
Oh, no, sir.
We shall row out to them. You will never forget this day. I'll take you aboard with me.
Nolan, that's the old problem, communication. See if you can make these poor slaves understand they are free men.
Aye, aye, sir. I'll do my best.
What do you do with the crew and the officers?
Oh, they're in chains. It's these poor wretches. In just a moment. Nolan, tell them we'll take them all to Cape Palmas. We're fortunate to have Nolan aboard. He speaks their patois, some Portuguese, I think it is.
Do you stop many slave ships?
Yes, we do. But even one is too many.
And Lieutenant Nolan has been with you quite some time.
Ever since we started this run. Lucky for us. What do they say, Nolan?
Well, I spoke with the head man, the chief. He says, please do not take them to Cape Palmas. It's no closer to their homes than New Orleans or Rio. He says that we might as well leave them here to die in the ocean and take them to a strange land.
What do they want?
He says, take us home to our own country, our own houses with our own babies, our own wives. So they've been below, locked up for 6 months. It's a floating horror.
All right. Tell them, if I have to sail this schooner through the great white desert, they shall go home.
Young Van, that is what it is to be without a home and without a country.
Terrible, sir, terrible. I've never seen anything like that.
If you are ever tempted to say a word or do a thing that shall put a bar between you and your country, I pray God in his mercy to take you. Think about your home, boy. Talk about it. Let it be nearer to your thought the further you have to travel from it. No matter what happens to you, no matter who flatters you or who abuses you, never look at another flag.
By all that's holy, sir, I would never, never. I expect no matter how old I become, home and the flag and country will always be sacred to me.
Sacred? Yes.
If my country needs me, it's only because I need her.
Oh, if anybody had said so to me when I was your age, I would not have ended so. A man without a country. I almost forgot to read this letter. Washington, D.C., December 23rd, my dear Lieutenant Nolan. It seems time has gone so quickly that I'm surprised to find it almost 20 years have passed since you took me, Green Edinson, aboard a slave ship. For my part, I've been working in Washington and seem now to have some influence here.
I wanted to write and tell you I've been trying to move heaven and earth to have you allowed to return home. Huh. He's a good boy. It is like getting a ghost out of prison. They pretend there is no such man as yourself.
Lieutenant? Lieutenant? My dear man, what are you doing sitting here in the dark reading? Are you all right?
Yes.
Since the letter came from Washington, I put it through without censoring it. Is it bad news?
How old a man would you say I am, Captain? By the looks of me, what would you say?
You have suffered, sir. That ages.
It was a little over 20 when they sentenced me at Fort Adams. When I was 40, I looked 60. I have always since then looked 60.
Have you, Nolan?
I am 75. This letter... You see, there's no one left to forgive me. Was it meant to be that I was to live like this? I was thinking I served on a ship that stopped the slave trade. They were not the only slaves. I've lost count of the number I've sailed on in 55 years.
Admiral Van Ness, it was good of you to come aboard. I do fear for the lieutenant's life.
Well, Captain, it's fortunate I could. I've been trying everything I know to have Nolan return to land. I wanted him forgiven. You know, he once said to me, I am a man without a country. But as I see it, it's the country that has lost sight of the man.
This is his cabin, Admiral. Do not be alarmed when you see him. His hair is snow white. The lines on his face, very deep. And he's quite frail. Will you go in alone, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Come in, Van. Come in, dear boy. Oh, they told me to expect you. What a wonderful surprise. What is all that gold braid? You've come up in the world. Welcome, dear Van, to my country.
It's good to see you, Lieutenant. Oh, here, let me light your lamp. Well, my, what a place. Well,
by all means, give a good look round.
Yes, you've done a fine job with that red, white, and blue bunting around the picture of Washington.
Oh, you think so? I sewed it all myself.
And Washington, that's an excellent likeness.
All done from memory. Not that I ever met him, but we always had pictures of him at home and in our barracks and... And the last time in the judge's chambers, I saw... How do you like the eagle?
It's magnificent, magnificent. Must have as big a wingspread as a real one.
5 foot, would you say?
It took me 7 years on and off carving every feather of her. And then the gilding. I bet you I still have gold leaf under my fingernails.
But it's indeed majestic, and it fits so well between the two portholes.
I made it too large to fly out.
And what do we have here? Why, the United States, is it not?
It is on a big piece of sailcloth, 7 feet wide. It was the very first thing I made, who knows how many years ago, when I'd been transferred from one ship to another. I'd roll her up and take it with me.
Indiana Territory, Mississippi Territory, Louisiana Territory.
I expect it's quite out of date. There have been changes.
Oh, yes, very many, Lieutenant.
My dear boy, I'm so very pleased that I'm at last permitted to talk to someone about my beloved country.
Now, are you sure this isn't too much of a strain for you?
Man, I know I'm dying. I know I shall never see the United States again. But I am dying at home. For this is my home. The sea has been my land. Somebody whispered to me, I wasn't supposed to know, that now the old flag has 34 stars in it. 34. I don't know what their names are, but you'll tell me their names. Please, Van, you must break this awful silence. Tell me a little of the United States before I die.
Well, and I've come here to do just that. I'll tell you everything you ask about. Only I'm not quite certain where to begin.
Tell me more.
Well, now I've given you the names of the 34 states.
Mm. And you've shown me on my map where they are.
Mm-hmm. I've told you about the steamboat and the railroad, the telegraph and the...
Wonders have been taking place while I sat on the sea, rocking my life away. Who is the president?
Well, that's Abraham Lincoln.
Ah. I'm tired. Such a beautiful tiredness. Bring me my book of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. I brought this very prayer book aboard the Nautilus with me over 50 years ago. I remember so clearly. Open it up, lad. It will fall at the right place. Now, read to me the passage I have marked in red.
We beseech thee with thy labor to behold and bless thee, President of the United States and all others in authority.
Yes. That prayer. I have repeated those words night and morning. How many years did I say? 50? More. I'm going to close my eyes now. Van, look in my Bible when I'm gone.
I shan't go far, Lieutenant. I'll be right outside. Sleep well.
Philip Nolan passed away in his sleep. He left a note in his Bible which read, "Bury me in the sea. It has been my home. But will not someone set up a stone for my memory at Fort Adams or New Orleans, that my disgrace may not be more than I ought to bear? Say on it, 'In memory of Philip Nolan, Lieutenant in the Army of the United States.' He loved his country as no other man loved her, but no man deserved less at her hands." Strange and haunting story of a boy's mistake, ending in the tragedy of a man. Edward Everett Hale wrote The Man Without a Country in 1863, against a background of the Civil War. Brother fighting brother, North and South, both American, each asking, "Who am I loyal to? What is right? What has this country done for me?" A full 100 years before another president would take the oath of office and say, "Ask not what this country can do for you." We've come a long way since Philip Nolan turned his back on his country, yet it is a story that cannot be repeated too often. Our cast included Russell Horton, Ian Martin, Earl Hammond, Robert Dryden, and William Griffiths. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is Tom Bosley inviting you to return to the General Mills Radio Adventure Theater for another exciting tale you can hear through the magic of radio. The General Mills Radio Adventure Theater is recommended by NEA, the National Education Association.
You probably don't go.